Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 620. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
I'm actually going to send things to Canada to find out if we're going to have six more weeks of winter. Fred, what's it? Oh, God. Fred! No!
Today, I learned that Canada also has a groundhog. I really only
Not
thought
anymore!
It was...
Not anymore!
I guess that's true.
Yeah, it's a coincidence that Chris O. you found out today, and the groundhog had its demise today.
He found out, and with his knife, he discovered.
Earl is also here.
I learned how to peel potatoes today, so if it beats, I can peel it.
Peeling potatoes, peeling some Fred. Who knows what you're going to peel next?
So both of those are, we need to discuss both, but the Fred thing, I've really only ever known about Phil the groundhog, and then we have another groundhog in PA that does our lottery commercials, like he's like the other groundhog, and it's really stupid, but they're the only two groundhogs I ever knew about. I mean, they made a movie in Punxsutawney with Bill Murray, right? Like, I mean,
right,
classic,
right.
Classic comedy, Groundhog Day. I've never, did not know that this was a tradition anywhere else. It's so stupid. I was like, we have to be the only idiots that do this. But Emily,
probably like, oh, it brings in tourists because it is certainly the only reason people know that town exists.
Yeah.
So somebody, it's like Iowa when it does like the presidential. Nobody cares, but you get all that attention for a few months and weeks, and yeah, everybody turns to. I forget the name of the town now. Groundhog's Irish.
Yeah, Punxsutawney.
Punxsutawney, and I watched the Groundhog's Day musical today. I didn't realize that was a thing.
I didn't know that either. That's nuts.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, so Canada's groundhog died. We're not sure what that means.
It's probably why we have this frost coming in this weekend.
So and, they thought he was hibernating. He was not.
just not alive anymore. You would think you would check that, right? Before your big event.
Well, that was what they did. They're like, they normally like wake them up for like out of hibernation so they could do this thing. And they went to wake up Fred, and Fred did not wake up. I shouldn't laugh. It's very sad.
Poor Fred, the Canadian groundhog.
Well, apparently so. The average life expectancy of a groundhog is 3 years. And Fred was 9. Something tells me they probably should have replaced Fred at some point.
Yeah, I mean, Phil gets replaced all the time. It's just like, here's a groundhog that we call Phil, and you all are drunk out here in the morning.
It doesn't matter which groundhog it actually is. We just found this groundhog last night.
We call it Phil.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they probably started the thing, but like, why not do that? Like, why not just like... Why not find a replacement instead of announcing he's dead? Or is it like it already started and it's like, crap, our groundhog's dead?
It's not that I had a backup. Like, I think
this is the thing, like, there's some horrified child somewhere who's like, oh my god, and they have no idea how to deal with the situation, and you've like traumatized like a poor 9-year-old.
Oh. Anyway, it's Groundhog's Day.
In Fred's place, a child with a groundhog hat was called up on stage and handed a toy groundhog.
Also, this cannot see its shadow, so...
No, the child declared the shadow could be seen.
Oh, great. Well, I guess spring is coming sooner than later. And then Earl made a comment about potatoes, and that we are speculating that is why Jeff is not here today.
He was sentenced for 12 years to peel potatoes for his wife.
Yeah, evidently he's not good at peeling potatoes or other things, which is, I don't know, like peeling potatoes is like when it, like you give that the, you know, if you're in a kitchen, like you give that job to like the kid, right? Like, right. Like you can do this because
you bastard.
You can't there mess it up.
It's really hard to not. I don't understand. Like maybe you accidentally peel your own skin off with the thing. My dad used to peel potatoes with like a knife, and I'm like, don't do that.
Yes, like that.
Use a potato peeler,
and then I used to do it by knife, and I get that. But like, yes, potato peelers exist. They are very fun. I actually, like I said, I find it very soothing. I like, just kind of sit down. Same thing with it's a lot of work. The same thing with cutting up apples for apple pie. It's just very soothing. It's like you just get in the zone.
Yeah, it's like a mindless kind of task that you just kind of get into the groove of it. So we think that's where Jeff has been sentenced to potato jail. So hopefully he will be released on good behavior for next week. And it's been a wild week in terms of game stuff. We talked briefly about it last week. Microsoft dropped a pair of games last Wednesday and Thursday, which we will get to soon. But since then, it's been a stream of nonsense news. Let's see, what was this? Tony has dropped in that the Belarusian KGB adds World of Tanks studio boss to its terrorist list.
They are so mad that with the invasion of Ukraine by Russia and Belarusian support, the game company moved all of their business out of the country, and they've gotten so angry that now the head of the studio has been declared a terrorist by the state.
Yeah.
That seems normal.
So evidently, Belarus uses their terrorist list as like it's like a political stunt for them. So,
yes, but like, I mean, political stunts are stupid in general. But yes. I don't even get this one. Like, what is your base here? Oh, those video game companies are gonna get it now.
The World Tanks guys are really going to make a push politically. Nutty. last year, Embracer, and we talked about this, it seemed like they fleeced Square Enix for Crystal Dynamics and Eidos and all of the IP associated with those studios, including Tomb Raider and Legacy of Kain, and a few other things from the like Deus Ex, like all that stuff from the Western developers. Square Enix went to Embracer, and it was announced that Amazon has leased the Tomb Raider license. So not bought, leased the Tomb Raider license from Embracer for $600 million. Which is double what they paid.
It's paid insane.
For all of that.
They don't own it. They don't own anything. They could make a bunch of shows that are going to be around for like 10 years and then disappear when the lease is over. It's insane. What are they doing?
I don't know. But Embracer evidently made a good bet. Like
right? But Tomb Raider is not that pop. I can't understand. Like, that is, like, how can you possibly recoup that investment?
It is popular, but it isn't at the same time because, like, you know, like we want to make like, this Tomb Raider universe, and it's like there's Lara Croft, and there's Lara Croft.
Right. I can't name another character in that. I know there are some, like her father's a character, but I can't think of any like off the top of my head.
I mean, I know she has a butler, Ida, and.
And they fight against, what's it, Trinity or something like Trinity. There's like an organization.
I wouldn't know.
I mean, that's something that I think was in the movies too. Like it's something that's streamed from game to game. But you, like they don't have characters, right? Like it's it's, you know, it's why Lara Croft's name was on the movie. That was like Lara Croft Tomb Raider, and that starred Angelina Jolie. Like, there is not another character there.
Like, you could almost, like, remove the Tomb Raider from that stuff, and the fact that Angelina Jolie was headlining the movie would have been enough on its own.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, at that point, I didn't know anything about Tomb Raider. Like,
I was going to ask, and maybe, was she that big of a star back then? Like, I know she's a big star now, but I don't know if she was, like, that big of a name on her own back then.
I thought she was, but I mean, maybe, you might be right. Like, let's check her filmography here.
Yeah.
She has a really long Wikipedia page.
yeah, she does.
Let's see. Tomb Raider was... That's one? Yeah, so she had been around. She was in Hackers in 1995. You know, I mean, that's a cult classic. But
I mean, that was like her first...
Yeah, first big role, yeah. And then she was in Girl Interrupted, which I think got her good publicity there. Gone in 60 Seconds right after that. And then Tomb Raider. I mean, she was in stuff in between there, but...
Yeah, so, I mean, she wasn't the Angelina Jolie we know now, where it's like you say her name. Because, I mean, I think after this, she does Shark Tale, or she does some animated movie, right?
After Tomb Raider, yep,
Shark Tale, you're right.
Yeah,
but there, yeah.
Yeah, it was after Tomb Raider 2, whatever that was, the Cradle of Life.
Cradle of Life. I mean, I can't, but I watched the original Tomb Raider.
She was in the animated Beowulf movie too.
Yes.
Was and that Kung Fu Panda.
Yes, I mean Kung Fu Panda is probably just a money cow at this point.
Like Kung Fu Panda had everybody, like Jack Black's in that, and
this what three of them, four of them?
Yeah, oh, there's at least three.
And then the TV show, yeah, that is like, I mean, I don't envy her getting that cash cow.
Yes, what a shame. Yeah, I don't know what Amazon's doing. It seems crazy to spend that much money on a series that is popular, but like, is it that, like, I mean, I guess they spent $1 billion on Lord of the Rings, so.
But that had a built-in base because like those movies did billions of dollars.
Yes.
Where I think the highest grossing Tomb Raider was Tomb Raider. I think it might have been the original Tomb Raider, and I don't think the 2018 one did as well.
No, I thought that one kind of fizzled a bit. Didn't flop, but
they were going to make a sequel to it, and then
it did good. It was $274 million on a $90 million budget. It's not bad.
Yeah, it did. But I think the original still did better, which is not necessarily what you want when it's almost 20 years apart.
Yeah, actually, they weirdly did the. Am I reading this right? Did they do the exact same amount? I think somebody's just fucked up with the wiki because anybody can edit it. That seems crazy that they both have 274 million as their numbers. Anyway, Tomb Raider, $600 million to Amazon. Kind of crazy. And let's see. Keep the Star Wars one for a moment. Jason Schreier released a it was not an in-depth article, but did dive into the 343 industry's layoffs, which he is advising. There were 95 people let go from there, saying that there's an engine pivot to Unreal, which is unconfirmed. Seems like they are maybe sticking with this. I think it's the Slipstream one for primary stuff, but maybe using Unreal for secondary stuff that is outsourced. And currently they're only focusing on multiplayer at 343. Big piece that came out of there, out of that article for me, was that they had single player and multiplayer developers working in Unreal, doing their own thing, while Infinite is kind of out there. Their live service game is out there floundering without insane content.
Why are they doing that? And why are any of those people still employed?
I don't believe they are. They at least some of them are gone out of the 95. A lot of the story group was let go out of the campaign stuff. But it's insane to me. You guys should be creating content for the game that we are currently marketing and selling, and you're off here working in a completely different engine that we don't utilize for this project.
Right. It's like, here's this thing that clearly has been screaming for more content for a long time, and that's it. Like, people like the fundamentals of Halo and even the new one, but there's just not enough to do. You just run out of stuff. And these guys are just spending all their time not adding to the stuff, even though it's their job.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I think this happens in studios all the time, though, where it's like, okay, like you know, like once a game's out, you don't have all like 200 people working on it, and it was probably them like prototyping what's next. But yes, to your point, it's like, yes, the game, as we commented time and time again, like it's still kind of getting to the point where it launches on parity with the other Halo games, so you should have thrown people on everything. But it was a weird, I think goes back to what we've said most of last year, is that I think, you know, like I understand being hands off, but I don't think Microsoft is that great at managing studios. And like, to them, and I, this is totally fair, if you get that engine set up, it seems like they are just like, okay, you're going to be working on this, get it done. And then they just kind of step aside and hope the studios can run itself. Where, like, Halo was their marquee brand. And the fact that, like, there's a new game out, I mean, I guess it's a year plus now, that has foundered and is it was supposed to be a continuous game. And now you're saying, like, yeah, we're not even going to do single-player updates. It's just going to be multiplayer. And that's not even like maybe new content. This is fixing it so it works as people hoped it would have worked when it launched.
Yeah. And I mean, it's still missing, like, you know, there's still not a good cadence on actual new content coming to it. New maps, new game modes. You can't really defend it. Like, it's a great core game. The base game is phenomenal. It plays great. Looks great, but it does not have enough in it. Like, it was something we kind of commented on last year. It was like, it doesn't have enough in it, you know, right now. But it's so good that we really enjoy what's there, and that's why it was our game of the year. But like, over the course of the year, like, if you want people to continue playing, you need to give them new stuff, new reasons to come back.
And like, I feel like part of our expectation was, this is Microsoft's flagship franchise. Like, maybe it doesn't have as much as we would want, but obviously they're going to stand behind it and give us more.
Yeah.
And what the fuck?
Yeah. What, like four maps over the course of the year? Maybe five? Like, and it's just, what a mess. All right. God of War Ragnarok is announced to have sold 11 million copies. Good for them.
Yeah, impressive.
Yeah. When that game come out, end of October, early November.
I think it was beginning of November. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the beginning.
About 3 months, 11 million copies. Very good for a, you know, console exclusive. So there's that. Earl, you dropped this in earlier. Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo will not formally be part of E3 2023. They won't be on the show floor, but they will be showing stuff that week in LA.
They're going to, like, eliminate E3 by being, like, tangentially a part of it. I kind of feel bad for E3 the way that they're treating them.
But I mean, to be fair, and I could be wrong, Microsoft had gone away from that previously too, because they started doing like the in-store stuff. Sony did their own thing. I think the only people who were left were Nintendo, and everything's saying that Nintendo's just like, we don't have anything major after Zelda, or enough major content to be like, yeah, we're gonna have a, like, we're gonna invest this money.
That could be.
But they're still using the fact that E3 exists to like get eyes. Let's hold this show right next to E3, like adjacent.
Yeah, like they're still gonna have their press conference, right? It'll be like the Sunday or Saturday before. It just won't be an E3 press conference.
So E3 gets like nothing out of it. It's in fact, since I think Microsoft goes first, right? Like they're gonna like
maybe
take people's attention away. And like by the time people are like bored of other announcements, they're just you can have what's left E3.
But that's always been the thing, right? Because like we don't go to the show, so like what we see are those press conferences. So like if Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo are kind of launching outside of that, like. And it's not E3 branded. It's just, here's the Microsoft showcase. Here's the Nintendo Direct. Here's the PlayStation. What was that? State of Play. Yeah, weird. I don't know how E3 survives, but
I mean, to be fair, I've been declaring E3 dead for years now, and it shambles onwards.
It's like a zombie.
Because I mean, honestly, the business model of it just doesn't make any sense anymore. I mean, we saw it, I think you guys have touched on this briefly last week. Microsoft had built, what was it called, their
Developer Direct.
And I mean, we got a new game out of that. We got several, you know, updates on games. Sony has State of Play, Nintendo has their Direct. Like Nintendo Directs have been going on for over 10 years now. State of Play's been going on for 3-4 years now. So it's like, you know, they've refined it. They know how to get that message out. As the end user, Direct, State of Play, Developer Direct, same thing to me. I'm getting information on these games via video package that you're putting together.
Yeah.
You're not standing on stage with applause, but it's the same thing as an end user.
Yeah, and for us, that's what we want, right? We want to see the trailers. We want to see the gameplay. We want to know the release dates or, you know, what you're telling us is the release date. That's it. Like, we don't need anything else. But I do think sometimes we look at E3 and we forget that it is a trade show.
Yes.
But I think you kind of said, like, what is the point of it? And like, trade shows are for buyers to come and see, like, how much of this am I going to buy? Like, but with digital being such a strong portion of the market now, like, is Best Buy or GameStop really sending buyers to?
Probably not.
Yeah. So who's going to this?
They're in fact, they're in direct conversations with Microsoft and Sony, and they're not.
Yeah, as I was gonna say, can you afford not to at this point stock this stuff?
Right.
Especially if you're like, you know, like a GameStop. GameStop's not going, oh, you know, this game doesn't look great to us. It's like, yeah, you're going to take whatever we give you, you're going to sell it because you have nothing else.
And I do wonder if that hurts like a mid-tier publisher like Embracer, because like you're gonna buy stuff from Microsoft, Sony, EA, Ubisoft, Nintendo, Activision, but like if your buyers don't know what is this weird thing that what's that company that does the Sherlock games, Frogware,
yeah,
like are you gonna stock their games? Like, does it even matter? Because like if you want a Frogwares game, are you going to GameStop to buy it? Like I don't know what E3 brings to the table anymore, though. I do like that, you know, that consolidated time period of we're gonna get all the game news now as opposed to the summer of games.
Yes. That I can agree on. is that it's much better to kind of get that, like, yeah, that first pandemic summer. I still have nightmares.
That was a mess. Like every other week, somebody had a new thing. Ubisoft had like three in a row.
Yeah, and I think the other thing with trade shows, and we'll hear about it more as we go on today, is that there just are not that many games anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that like there aren't games, but I mean, like, we're going to get, you mentioned the Halo stuff. We'll get to the Coalition in a bit. We'll get to EA and Respawn. We'll get to... There's been a lot of like, yeah, we really won't have anything much to show you at this rate.
Yeah. So that's the other half of this week, is there was lots of delays or announcements of cancellations. Star Wars Jedi Survivor was delayed 6 weeks, moves out of March to the end of April. I think it might be moving a little too close to Tears of the Kingdom, but it's still on its own, and it's Star Wars, so I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, 6 week delay is nothing. In fact, you kind of that's the good kind of delay,
right? Like we're just polishing, right?
Yeah.
So I think that one's fine. Like it is newsworthy if you were looking for something in March. Like you may not have anything till the end of April, but whatever. Sony is canning its PlayStation Plus collection. Which was a selling point of having PlayStation Plus on a PS5, because you got like these 20, 25 games with your subscription.
Yeah.
But that they are pulling that away. No real reasoning behind it. Just this will no longer be part of your subscription.
I saw people excusing it, like saying like they're announcing something else, but they didn't announce anything else.
Right. Yeah.
So like, give the other part. Like if there's another part, like don't just make us think you're evil.
Exactly. Because right now it just seems you're taking something away that I was paying for. Whether like, you don't pay just for the PlayStation Plus collection. You're paying for PlayStation Plus and whatever that gets, but you're taking a piece of that away out of my subscription. Like, what are you replacing it with? Not having anything to go with it just looks like you're taking 20 games away from us.
Now, you still own those, though. If you claim them, they're still yours.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So do that.
Do that, like, now.
Yeah, go in.
You really came in on a PlayStation 5, right?
Yes. Believe that they are. It PlayStation Plus collection is a PlayStation 5 offering. But you might be able to do it on your app, on a PlayStation app. So you might be able to put them in your library. I don't know. It's funny to see like Fallout 4 in there because it's owned by Microsoft now. So
yeah. I mean, there's an Assassin's Creed game in there. Like, I think it's Odyssey.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good selection. Yeah, you've got
no, it's Origins in there, Ratchet,
yeah. Origins, good game. Some Microsoft, not Microsoft, some Sony games, Days Gone, God of War, Ratchet.
I mean, they're all great games.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, if you have PlayStation Plus, there's no reason not to claim them. So get them, so you'll at least have them once they take them away from you. And then there were more cancellations. It was announced, I guess, that Respawn EA had canceled a pair of Apex or Titanfall games. So Apex Legends Mobile was put on the death list.
Nobody that's a cares. Game that's
out there, right?
Probably should die anywhere.
but that's gone. And like, I think what's interesting about that is there were mobile specific legends.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they'll bring them over to Apex proper. I don't think any of us are still playing it, but
yeah. Well, I think Apex, they also announced Apex was not had not met expectations in terms of sales recently. So this might be a whole paring down of the brand.
That could make sense. And they canceled a Titanfall Universe game. I don't know what that means. It was a single player game, which...
Well, Apex Legends is in the Titanfall Universe, which is, I think, yes, what they're trying to say. So it was a single player game that was, I mean, really in the Apex Universe, but it also had Titans in it. I think some details just came out before we started recording, which is weird.
And it was not Titanfall 3.
No, it was not Titanfall.
Very specific at that. Yes. Yeah. That's a shame. I would like a new Titanfall Apex game that, you know, with a campaign. That would be fun. That Titanfall 2 campaign is very good.
Yes, it was fantastic. And too long ago at this point. How long has it been now? Titanfall 2 was what? 20...
That's a good question.
2015?
Wow.
2016,
yes. That's still like 7 years old. Like, that's nuts that we have not gotten another Titanfall game since then. I guess Apex is filling that hole because it's in that universe, but
it's not filling that hole.
No,
I like Apex. I don't pay it as much anymore. I don't pay it, but it was not. It was never Titanfall. It was a good game. It was just never Titanfall.
Yeah. And I like a good battle royale, but there is something about being able to play a 5-10 minute, you know, deathmatch. So, like, they are different games. You play them for different reasons. And, like, I would like a regular Titanfall multiplayer game. Like, Where I can drop Titans on people's heads and shoot bots. We'll see. Maybe one day. But not anytime soon, because EA canceled that one. The Coalition, I guess as part of the other layoffs out of Microsoft, the Coalition has canceled a pair of titles, but one was a full-size non-Gears title. And one was like a smaller game that they were working on. Both have been canned, and their next game will be Gear 6. Seems like they're in full production on that now. I don't know. It's been a while since Gears 5. I kind of want Gear 6, but also I would have liked to see what they do outside of Gears.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
It's weird to me that like, I kind of felt like the studio was put together just to make Gears games. It's weird that they were making other stuff.
Yeah, the Coalition specifically refers to Gears. It's the COG is Coalition of Ordered Governments. It's weird that they were like doing it, but like when they announced it, I'm like, yeah, that could be cool. Like, they're really good with Unreal. They could do something in it, but I thought they were like 343. Like, you are the Gears studio. I guess we'll see. I'm looking forward to Gear 6 in 5 years. So. That seems to be how long games take to make now. So, more deaths in the game sphere. Rumbleverse being shut down this month. In a couple weeks, I believe, Earl.
Something like that.
Yeah. I thought that game was doing well. I had heard, you know, back, you know, over the fall that like people were playing it. It was doing, and Epic has now pulled the plug on it. So shame on that. That's another one. Did not make it a whole year. And it is on our things that died in 2023 list already.
Yeah, it's impressive how quicky that is. we'll continue going for a bit, but there's a lot of Yeah,
because Knockout City is going to join that
in June.
Yeah,
that one hurt because I actually do play that one, and I thought it was a ton of fun. I didn't realize it was apparently dead, so that was heartbreaking. But yeah, and the thing with these games is like, it's not that they die. It's not like, oh man, they're gonna stop supporting it. It's like they are gone. It's like we're shutting down the servers. Adios.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's part of the problem with online only games. But I do wish, hey, like we're shutting this down, but we've implemented a way for you to play bot mode or, you know, something. So like you could still play it. Like you won't gain progression to the season pass because that's gone. But it would be nice if these games didn't just disappear.
Yeah, I think I could be wrong. I think I was reading that they are doing a like the PC servers are going to stay up, or they're going to have like people can do like their own servers on the PC or something like that, which is great for them. But like, it does suck that for everybody else, it's just kind of like, yeah, this game is bye-bye. Yeah, I don't. It is just a sad state of affairs. Like I said, this one just hurt because I actually do play it with friends from time to time, and I have fun with it. I thought it was something fun and different and original from EA.
I do wonder if we're getting to a point with games. Like some people have gotten with Netflix where it's like, I'm not going to invest in playing your thing because they don't last a year now. So
right.
Knockout City, that was a little over a year, right? It was almost 2 years now.
Yeah, I know it was sometime during the pandemic. Yeah, yeah, it was 2 years because they're, I mean, to their credit, they were up to season 9, which yeah. Again, I think is it, not with it. It was supported. It was doing well. It had all the home. And I guess it just wasn't doing as well as I thought it was, so.
Shame. Like, it was, you know, looked fun. I never got a chance to kind of jump into it. But it's a shame for those that were enjoying it. Another one to add to the died in 2023 list. Another one here. I'm not sure if this has died, but Turtle Rock is ending support for Back 4 Blood. I did not read the announcement, so I'm not sure what that means. Could just be that they're not going to update it anymore, but leave the servers up.
Yeah, I haven't read. I just saw they stopped supporting it. I mean, to be fair, it was probably a mercy killing for the rest of us. But yeah, it's another one that, you know, didn't live up to expectations. And I mean, that's always going to be a bum rap, really. But you know, you say you're the spiritual successor to this, and you do come with those expectations, right or wrong, that you are the spiritual successor to this. So yeah, I think, you know, it is what it is.
I think there were interesting ideas in Back 4 Blood. I think the way they executed them and the way they set up their campaign stripped kind of the spontaneity and joy out of, you know, the Left 4 Dead stuff. They just went maybe a little too far with some of their changes.
Parts of it were just too difficult. That. It was just too hard to get, like, forcing yourself through hordes and hordes of things, and if you died, you lost everything and had to start at the same spot with nothing.
Yeah, like, it was kind of chasing the market trends of, like, hey, roguelikes are cool, right? What if we made our thing kind of a roguelike? But, you know, what was fun about Left 4 Dead is, like, here's a map. You're going to go from point A to point B and just kill everything in it. It overcomplicated the formula. I think that is it for cancellations and news outside of, I'm not sure what this means, but Nintendo Switch Online vouchers will return.
Well, they have returned. I think, I don't know if you folks use them, but when Nintendo Switch started, Nintendo sells vouchers, which are for $100 and you can redeem them for like 2 games. So, I mean, on the base price, you save $20 on 2 games. And I think it's a decent program. You get 5% back. So you get $5 back for the $100. So, I mean, it's essentially just a way to game the system. So like, if you're a digital person like myself, it just makes the upfront purchase cheaper, especially for Nintendo, who historically doesn't really drop their games in price that often.
Do you choose which games, or is it like you just have like a voucher for two games?
The vouchers are for specific games, but okay. You can choose what those games are.
We'll have to look into that, because I have some Switch games in the near future that I want to get. So, all right. Well, I think that is it for news. But we also played a bunch of stuff, and we're going to name the Game Pass Game of January. And I'm kind of happy we did not name it last week, because if we had named it last week, it would have been Monster Hunter, hands down, because there was nothing else that came right out. And then Game Pass went nuts over the last 8 days, so lots to kind of to talk about there. Tony, what have you been playing?
So I've been playing a number of things. More Marvel's Midnight Suns, because I adore that game, but I've talked about it a lot. But the thing I've been playing most that's new this week is Age of Empires 2 Definitive Edition. Which I guess new is probably not the right word, but, you know.
I mean, back. It is new to console, right? You're playing it on console,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because like it's that version has been out for 4 years now on PC.
Yeah. And this version is, you know, it's the same game, but you know, updated so that it works super, super, super well on console. To the point where I think it actually, I started playing it on PC first, so I could get like a, you know, bring me back, mm-hmm. so that I could have like a, like, how did this play on PC before, and now we're on console. I think it plays better on console. They've added a lot of stuff and upgraded some things that I think are very, very interesting and fun and compelling. In fact, they added one thing to the game that I think fixes what I've always felt was wrong with RTS games. 'Cause there's always this thing where there's all of these cool things happening in an RTS game. You're sending your armies off to fight and you're attacking the enemy base. But most of the time, you're just staring at your own fucking base, moving like villagers around.
Yeah.
And I've always hated that. They have added to this game a feature where you can assign your villagers like a mission. So maybe there's one that's just basic, which means that the villagers divide themselves up so that some of them are going after food and some of them are going after wood and some of them are going after stone and some of them are going after gold. They just go out and they do all that on their own. Mm-hmm. Or you can switch it. You're like, all right, I want my villagers to work on rushing me to the next age. So the villagers themselves, without you having to do anything, will go out and find the right resources and build the right buildings, and you don't have to fucking watch them. You don't have to move them all around.
That's nice.
It's awesome. It is like the best thing. So you can focus on, you know, guiding your horsemen around to explore the map, or, you know, fight in a battle, or spend your time building an army. So you're not like managing your economy 100% of the time. It is an awesome, awesome feature. The controls on Xbox are really, really great. They've made it super easy to select units, select all things, like all units of a specific type at the same time. You can do that in like two clicks of a button. It works really well. It's so nice to like not have to worry about like, okay, I'm getting out my mouse and my keyboard and, you know, picking out the right units. You can just like double tap and you're like, oh, I have all my cavalry now. That stuff is great. You can select your like town center in one button and then hit another button to do the most common thing that you do at a town center. And all of the things you can select in one button have this feature. So if you pick a building, you can hit one button and it will for the town center, it's build a villager, which, you know, most of the time that's what you do at the town center. You build a villager, build a villager. If you select like a barracks, you hit one button and it's giving you that militiaman or spearman or whatever the like basic infantryman happens to be. So it comes really easy to like fill up your building queue really, really quickly without having to like move around. The other part, the game has full mouse and keyboard support. So you're like, I really wish I was playing that way. You can plug your fucking mouse into your Xbox and play that way. It's great. It's absolutely great. And unlike, I was going to make this argument against Monster Hunter. I don't have to because Jeff's not here. but the game comes with all the DLC and everything already. So like Monster Hunter launched like base Monster Hunter. There's a whole bunch of stuff missing. This game came with all of the DLC. So there are a few that you have to buy as add-ons. But a lot of like the lost campaigns and there's a bunch of stuff in there that you probably haven't played if you haven't played Age of Empires since Age of Kings came out. That's in there for free. So that like it bludgeons you with hours and hours and hours of content without having to like add on to it. So I think this is a fantastic, fantastic package. And like if you don't have a gaming PC, so you haven't been able to play the Definitive Edition, which was great before, it's just this is probably the best way to play it, and it's super easy to get into because the console controls are so great. It's surprising. Like console controls for RTS games normally suck. There's like a very small tier of like games where like Halo Wars was on that list. Yeah. And like still there's like
there's a few.
There's like, well, this would be the third one in my brain that
okay.
that did it fantastically well. So this is the way to play this game now. Like, if you have a gaming PC, that's great, but it's probably better to play this game on console now.
All right. I may give it a go. It does have 100 achievements in the base game. That's nutso. I'm like kind of looking over them right now. I do like that none of them are as stupid as Age of Empires, the original Age of Empires Definitive Edition, which was like, gather 5 billion pieces of wood. Like,
right, gather 100,000 gold. Good luck.
Like, I would just like, it's like, all right, well, I'm not going to get that naturally, so I'm just going to, like, people had created farming maps, so you just put it on and click, you have to select all your little villagers and hit the trees, but they had just made maps with trees and rocks, and like, you just walk away. Let it do it. I'm glad none of those achievements are here because they are terrible. It is like just, it's a lot of like win a game playing as like this nation state or whatever. So that works for me. And then a ton of campaigns.
So there's so many campaigns. So many campaigns.
All right. You play anything else besides, you said Marvel's Midnight Suns, but yeah. Anything else besides Age of Empires?
I can't think of anything else.
All right. Well, so Age of Empires, nice choice there from Game Pass. But Earl, you've been playing another game that dropped to Game Pass.
Yeah.
Brand new game, too, game right?
Yeah.
Girls going hard. High Fi Rush.
Stupid name. Very stupid name.
Terrible.
But fantastic game. Truly amazing experience so far. I touched on it briefly last week. So for those of you who don't know or who haven't seen it, High Fi Rush is a rhythm-based action adventure game. I guess it's structured like Bayonetta in that you have instances which are just like, arena fights. Essentially, you go to places and they're going to throw in a bunch of enemies at you. But in between that, you're doing a bunch of platforming and navigating in space. You get partner characters who help you. Like, one person will shoot stuff so, you know, you can drop down rocks or something, and another one will punch through stuff to open up paths and stuff like that. It is not Zelda. It is not a puzzle game. There's giant icons. It's
pretty linear.
No, but there's giant icons. It tells you exactly who you need. It's not like, oh man, I have to. Yeah. It's like, nope. You're gonna need the guy who punches. Here's the guy who punches an icon. You need the woman who shoots. Here's the woman who shoots icon. There's nothing. There's no skill involved in that aspect of it. But where it does shine for me is like how it ties the rhythm into everything. And I will just denote early at the beginning. And I said this last week. One of the good things about it, for the most part, is you don't necessarily need to be on beat. It does not penalize you for being off beat. It rewards you for being on beat. It does not punish you. You can defeat enemies by button mashing if you wanted to. Not all of them, like some of them, but like the stuff you need to defeat them is never rhythm-based for the most part. There are some enemies that you do need. When you learn how to parry, which is my Achilles heels right now, because I'm really terrible. Actually, what I find best to do with the parry attacks is to not focus on the game and actually just close my eyes and listen to the beat. Yes, you have a beat, and for the most part, it's a four-note beat, and you attack on those beats. If you attack on them, you do more damage. There's the basic combos, you know, like mixed light attacks, heavy attacks, light and heavy. Then you can also do, I forget what they call it, like a drop combo, which is like you do 1-2, take a pause, 1-2. So it's like musical note to it. And then if you combo well enough, you get a, I forget what they call it, a special, where you get like that overhead circle with the cat. But again, and again, you can screw it up. You won't do that attack. But again, it does not punish you. It's not like, oh man, you have to finish enemies with this. It's just like it gives you points for doing it well. There are enemies in the back half of the game where it's like they go into rage mode. And in order to kind of defeat them in rage mode, you actually do have to parry, which does mean you do have to then be on the beat with them. And that is one of the few aspects where I feel like it kind of betrays. Like, I understand what they're going for, and I get it. And it's, you know, like, again, you can earn the rhythm. But I do feel like it's one of those times where it betrays, like, oh, you won't get punished if you don't necessarily stick to the beat. But
so you can beat those guys without parrying
but it's
properly.
They're
a pain in the ass. Like, it's better to just hope you're parrying correctly. And you don't have to parry it perfectly. As long as you get enough of them, you'll get the overlay circle, which is basically the one hit kill at that point.
Yes. Or if you do it well enough, you can stun them. And,
yes.
And don't get me wrong. Like, there's a lot. They throw a lot at you, which is why I have to turn off the rhythm beat. Because like, if you want, there's an option to just have like the meter at the bottom and you can sync up to that. But I found that way too much with that and like actually trying to focus on the combat and the different types of the enemies, that was just too much information overload for me. Though the game, again, does a really good job of it because like your character, if you pay attention to him, he will snap to the beat.
And everything in the world is interacting with the beat. So
the enemies attack on the beat. And like your cat 808, it also pulses to the beat. So it's like everything is to the beat. It's so fantastic. Again, which is why it's like, again, it's February 2nd. Very contented for Game of the Year, though, is because like, it does such amazing stuff with the sound design. Like when you jump, if you jump, you jump whatever. But if you jump on a beat, it adds an extra rhythm to the actual song. And you know, you can double jump and then you can dodge and that. I think the dodging is like a drum, and then
like a little—it's a cymbal clap. Yes. It's like a hi hat, like. Tss.
Yes, and I love that you can combo those, and it will add that it'll beat to the song. You do well, and the music, the tempo, you know, picks up and stuff like that. There's a lot of little stuff where they have actual licensed songs in here, and that's really. I also like that they were wise enough to be like, oh. We also have a streamer mode in case you want to stream it so your stream won't get in trouble. We'll play some of our own music. But yeah, so there's Bethesda original music in there as well. It's just really, really I mean, I was going to say it came out of nowhere. It literally came out of nowhere.
Yeah, they just dropped it on Wednesday.
I found that like so much of it is so well done. And this isn't a knock on the game, even though it might sound like it. It's that it also, it's not the prettiest game in the world. It has a really nice style to it, but it's a very basic looking game.
It looks like a Saturday morning cartoon.
It does. I mean, I think, you know, the thing I think a lot of people have said, it looks like a missing Dreamcast or GameCube era game. And I mean that in style, not.
Yeah.
And yes, Saturday morning cartoon is exactly the vibe it's going for, because like the main character Chai is, this is a trope that you see often in the, like the main hero's an idiot.
Completely.
Or not necessarily an idiot, but everybody else around them is more competent.
He just like fails forward.
Yes, he is brute force personified. He is like, we are going to do this because I said we're going, like, we're going to do this because I believe we can do this. And everybody else is like, we're going to come for the pan. He's like, this will work out. Don't you worry. And it does. But he's charming. I like all of the characters so far. I like how they tie, like, again, it has a sense of humor to it. They tie in a lot of these elements to like the characters and the bosses. Like one of the stages or acts, I don't know what you call it. Like the finale.
The levels are called tracks.
Oh, tracks.
Yeah.
So the finale of that one is you are essentially getting the boss to create more elaborate AR design so that he runs out of money.
Yeah, that was good.
So this is Peter Parker Spider-Man thing where it's like taunt the enemy. The enemy kind of gets like these blinders on and gets, so like he's like, we're gonna have like two volcanoes here, and the volcanoes are gonna shoot and things get bigger, and like he doesn't meet on top of it. It's just like, hey, it's your budget going down and down and down. So like at the end of that track, I mean spoilers, he's like creating this giant robot. And he runs out of money halfway through construction, so it just stops. And that's it.
You can just beat him from there, because like, yeah.
it is utterly charming. I recommend it. It's on Game Pass, so there's no reason not to check it out. But I'm completely enamored with this game right now, so.
So I too kind of love this game. It works for me. I like a game like Devil May Cry, which is, you know, the type of action game it's going for. But I think, like as you said, like all the way that everything works with the beat, the rhythm, and the music, from your platforming to your combat, and that. You don't have to be perfect with it, so you're always kind of progressing. I also think that when you fail, very good checkpoints. Like, yeah. there's very rarely is it like you have to do this whole section over again. Even in the middle of a boss fight. So, like, I died on the first boss fight. I'd gotten her down. She has 4 health bars. You have to get them down. You have to get the health bars down. And I got her down the 4th one. She killed me. And that where it kicks you back off at is in the middle of that boss fight. It gives you all your health back, and you're like, here you go. And it's like, all right, yeah, I can manage this now. It's very smart with the way it's like, hey, we want you to progress. It can be challenging. Like, we're going to throw a lot of enemies at you, especially like as the game progresses. But you should, you know, if playing along and understanding, you know, the mechanics of the game, you should be able to get through it. Even if you are button mashing offbeat, like, you should be able to progress. So really neat, really, really cool game.
I was also surprised, I guess not surprised, but like you mentioned that eggs, like if you start the game from stasis, from sleep mode, like it will put you back into like the air. So it's like, oh, you can level up, and you, so it's not like you're gonna start in the middle of a chapter and trying to figure out where you are. It's like, no, we're going to put you back in the home base. You know, we have to talk to the cat, whatever, chill out for a bit, and then we'll put you back. We'll put you right back into where you were, but it's not like we're going to throw you right into the game. It's like, no, you can chill for a bit.
Oh, that's neat. I hadn't done anything right from like quick resume or anything, but.
Because originally I was so worried because like you can, what am I trying to say? You can upgrade stuff. And I was like, oh man, the only time you can upgrade is in the year. And I was like, no, you can upgrade. We're gonna introduce a mechanic so you can upgrade in the apples. Like you have to find them, but like you find enough of them usually that you can upgrade.
Yeah, and they're kind of spaced just like an old school save point too.
Yeah,
like
you can usually tell the boss fighter's coming.
Yeah, something's coming up because they're giving me the option to do an upgrade here. So, and yeah, you collect I think it's called scrap. You like that's what you're using to that's your currency. It's a game with another game, ton of achievements, but I think it gives you them properly over time. Like I always feel like I'm getting a couple every time I play a level. I think probably by the time I'm done, I'll have about half of them, and then the rest are like, you know, whatever end game stuff is, and there's probably multiple difficulty levels. I don't think I am good enough to play it on normal. I don't think I will be able to play it on like whatever the super hard mode is.
And it's also not why I play games. I'm never I'm enjoying the ride. I'm enjoying the experience. I don't need to prove I have bigger balls than somebody by being like, yeah, I beat this on hard without taking any damage. Like I'm good.
But yeah, super, super happy with this game. I think I'm like 7 hours in. And I've now beaten 4 of the 6 bosses. So 2/3 of the way through. It's probably about 10 hours or so, which I personally think that's a great time frame. There was a little bit of controversy about it. I don't know what you people want. Like one, I think it's a $30 game if you're buying it. And otherwise, it's on Game Pass. And $10 hours is the perfect like length for a game like this.
Yeah.
That's like, I don't think Bayonetta is much longer than that. I don't think Devil May Cry is much longer than that. Like, I don't understand this need to have games that are all 30 hours long.
And it's not that they want these long games. It's like, I mean, it's like a dick measuring contest. Like, oh yeah, like this major exclusive and it's this long and yeah. It's like, yeah, nobody cares. It's like, I'm having fun with it. You do your thing, but I'm just like, because again, it seems like a game that could like route its welcome, but I understand, like, it seems like it's wise not to like, you know, prolong anything just for the sake of it. Even some of the gimmicks they introduce, it's like, oh yeah, you'll be over this in no time, or like, we'll do it once or twice and then we're good, right?
Yeah, like I thought, like very early on, I think it's like the first or second level, you do this, you have the grappling hook. I think it's right after you get the grappling hook, actually. You grapple onto this thing, and then you go on basically a cart run, right? Yeah. Like Chai is swinging, you have to avoid things left, right, press A at a certain time. They don't do that again for like 6 levels.
Yes. So,
I was like, oh, I see what this is going to like. Early on, I was like, we're going to have combat arenas. We're going to have platforming. We're going to have these things. Every level is going to be like that. And no, like they spice it up a bit. There are different objectives in some of the levels. There's like little side quests, like from these little robot guys. Sometimes they're really stupid, like clear the pigeons off of stuff. Or can you find something for this robot, and like it gives you a reason to kind of go explore the area, but so they're always giving you something else to do in the game. And I personally think it's phenomenal. Like, I'm really, really impressed with this game. You play anything else, Earl?
Give me 1 second.
Sure. Well, while we're waiting for Earl, and since Jeff's not here, I played Dead Space. Played the Dead Space remake, a little bit of it. Jeff is way further in it than I am, so I ended up playing mostly Hi-Fi Rush. But Dead Space is it is Dead Space. It's a pretty looking version of Dead Space. And honestly, I just played Dead Space last year as part of VG Club, and I don't remember it being as aggressive as it was in the opening. Like, it's either that or I just not, like, I don't know. Like, these enemies are coming at me, and I'm like utilizing all of my ammo to take their limbs off and back away from them. I don't remember that from just playing it last year. So that might be something.
I was going to say, maybe remembering from so long ago, but it hasn't actually.
Yeah, no, it was like just last. I'm like, this, like, I was like, this is nuts. Like, they're super aggressive. I did not have a super hard time in my replay of it last year. And like, I was like, at one point, I was down to no health packs and one sliver of health in the first level. It's like, I'm going to die. I'm going to die on this first level. What the hell is going on? I've played Dead Space multiple times. I should be able to play this remake. And I think that is like the one change, that the enemies seem slightly more aggressive. The ship, though, exactly like I remember, it just looks fantastic, though. It doesn't have that grainy look that like a 360 game does now. Like if you were to put a 360 game on the Series X. It just looks fantastic. It does not look as good as Callisto Protocol, but it plays significantly better. So I'll take better playing over shinier graphics and visuals every day of the week. Some people up in arms about Isaac having a voice now.
How dare they?
Right. It's the same voice that he has in 2 and 3. So instead of like people just talking at Isaac, he now responds to stuff, which story-wise makes sense. Made no sense why this guy in this giant armor suit in the first game never responded to people that were talking to him. Everyone just talked at him. And now he like has conversations. Like they're not deep. They're mostly the same dialogue, but he gives responses and it feels a little more natural. That game, very good, very well put together. A friend of ours said he thinks it's the kind of the high watermark for these remakes of these older games. I'm not sure I'm there with them yet, but I've only played that first level, so we'll see what other changes they have. I thought they did a wonderful job with Resident Evil 2 and 3 updating those older games. Dead Space isn't as old as that, and it's not as much of a fundamental change early on as Resident Evil 2 and 3's remakes had. But so far, enjoying it. Jeff also said that he was enjoying it, at least the first three chapters he played. Granted, Jeff is known to change his opinions, like everybody changes opinions, but. Jeff is known to sour on games, so
never.
We will see what he.
Jeff's love is eternal. So. Don't
until something goes wrong, and then he's like, "I'm out." Like
fuck like this
potatoes.
All. Fuck potatoes! I hate them forever.
Earl is back. What else have you been playing, sir?
So I finally got the chance to check out the Halo co-op edition or whatever. And what is the... It's a fun game. I mean, I think Halo Infinite fundamentally is a fun game. But you could tell that they added co-op to add co-op and not designed a game around it, because I played with three other friends and we played on Heroic, and it is a cakewalk right now because they do not increase the enemy count or the damage. So when you have like four people fighting what was a single player affair, and it's kind of open world, so you can do whatever. So like one of there was encounters that happened, but the one that kind of solidified it for me is before you kind of go out into the world of Halo Infinite, there's like that one like that monkey ape boss battle you have.
Yep.
And I remember in single player that thing kicked my ass. I took a lot of maneuvering and dodging to finally defeat him. It was a long fight. It took us 30 seconds to tear through him because there's four people shooting him with shotguns, knee-jerks, whatever, and he can't focus on all of us. And it's just, and then you go into that open world, and there's a bunch of the little bases right outside of there. And again, that was one where like I remember taking my time and deliberately going around, and I'm going to take this building, then go to this roof and try to pick up where I can before I go to the next one. And now I'm feeling, I'm like, I'm just going to grapple and punch this person, because if I don't, like, and it's like, and then like, you get, if you update the grapple, all four of us have like the grapples that stun enemies when you, and it's like, okay, so we are just like curing out these things. I'm like, this is, again, it's still fun, but fundamentally, I'm like, you did not design this game for this many people, and it shows. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but
just question on you saying like that you all had like the upgraded grapple. Are you able to bring in your chief?
You are. I tend to start a new character when I play with friends, at least for something like this, because I didn't want it to be where it's like, oh, it's like OP. And it's not, I mean, it's kind of easy. So it's like, it would be even worse if it was like, but I think it's like when you start co-op, which is a nice thing, I think, because a lot of games have issues with this. When you start co-op, you are given the option to pick a save slot. So I just created a new game. So like you can just create one of the save shots and just make sure whoever's hosting, I guess, because I think, you know, is it too far so that you can, because I think like, it basically it saves the progress on whoever, like on your thing. So it's not like some games, it's like the host is the person whose progress is saved. And this one's making sure that's not happening, because sometimes I do find it unfair, because I'm like, we're all doing the work, but like, oh, one of us is getting the credit. So.
That's nice. I'm glad everybody is like moving forward at the same pace.
Yeah. It's like I said, fun game. It's just really a shame that like they didn't do more to adjust for the fact that there's more players on the screen.
All right. Well, enjoy. And the rest of your Halo play. I do wonder, so I mean, since if they didn't update Heroic, if that's not giving you guys any challenge, I would assume Legendary is probably exactly the same. It might be a little bit harder, but it's not.
Yeah, and I think because the previous campaigns would update so that they would account for more players. Or I guess because it was more of a funnel win. Like this one, because especially with the grapple hook, you can kind of get around people, so you can just kind of flank them, and then like you can have power weapons and stuff like that. The one thing that it was weird, not weird, I guess, but like in all the Halo games, when you play through campaign, like if you got too far, like they would just pull somebody forward or backwards. This one, it doesn't seem to do that. Until you get to a part where it's like, we need, and then it's like, because I was next to a teammate and they kept on telling me, you need to get next to your fire team. I'm like, but we're here. The other two are elsewhere doing their own thing, but I'm here. And it's like, you need to get to your fire team. You need, I'm like, why? So I don't, again, I don't know if they, I don't know who they follow, actually.
All right, well, that's Halo Infinite co-op. Sticking with shooters, Microsoft and Nintendo teamed up and re-released GoldenEye 007. The remaster, I guess. I don't. I think that's what they're calling it.
Are they calling it anything? Because I think it's
a it's the N64 version.
Yes.
But on at least on the Series X, it's been updated to it has 4K textures. It's in widescreen. So it's not the standard square box. And they updated the controls on the Xbox version. My understanding is the Switch version is really just a ROM dump.
Well, I think they're both ROM dumps. It just depends on what your ROM does. Because like the Switch has, I mean, like for one, it has like online multiplayer because the Switch's emulator does and the Xbox One doesn't.
Right.
Which is a weird notion to think about. So yeah, it's like it's very weird and confusing. That like if you want multiplayer online, you pay the Switch version. But again, because it's being emulated, so I saw somebody complain about the fact that like you are just getting it is still split screen because it's not multi. It's not online. It's really just like tricking the system into thinking that there are four controllers.
Yes. Stuff. The other switches are extra controllers. That's it.
Yes. So it's like, yeah, it's literally just that. So it's still going to be split screen because it's not like organic multiplayer. It's a very weird release, but go on.
Yeah, so I played all the way through the campaign. I had fun with it mostly. I think there is seven missions. You know, the most iconic one is the dam, and then I think bunker is maybe the next one. That everyone kind of knows. The dam is the one where you kind of like go through the little installation at first, and then you get out onto the top of the dam and Bond jumps off. What's neat about the game, and I had forgotten this, and this is also something that can't remember the name of the group that did it, but the Time Splitters people who were
Free part Radical. Of Rare,
yeah, Free Radical. They kind of carried this over to Time Splitters is that their games, their difficulty isn't so much this is harder, like we're just upping the damage that enemies do and we're lessening your damage. There's a little bit of that here, but the difficulty in GoldenEye is really the difference between like, you know, the objectives you have and how many objectives there are. Like on agent difficulty, you may only have like two or three, where on, I think it's secret agent is next. There is a, you may go to five, and then on 00 agent, it could be like seven different objectives. And like, this gives more opportunities for enemies to shoot at you because you have to do more. So it's interesting, but it also gives you a reason to play those other difficulties because, you know, if you play on agent, for the most part, it's a cakewalk. There are some levels that are pain in the ass, but for the most part, fairly simple. Like you only have a few objectives to do. Play on secret agent gets a little bit harder because you have more stuff to do. There's more enemies. It's just like an interesting way of approaching difficulty by we're not just exponentially making it harder because of damage. We're going to give you more stuff to do as well. So it's not the same level, just harder. There's new stuff to do. I think that game is really fun for the first five missions. And then the final two missions, which are multi-stage, so St. Petersburg and Cuba have, I think St. Petersburg has five levels in it, and Cuba has four. So it's a beefy part of the game. But man, those levels are badly designed. They are. It's some of this is just my fault, like not remembering how to play. But so there's a part where you're going through this park in St. Petersburg, and you're meeting up against a Janice who, spoiler for GoldenEye, is Sean Bean's character.
At 20, oh god, how old is this movie now?
1997.
95. The game is 97.
Oh god.
Yeah, it turns 30 in 2 years, so it's 28 years old.
So Janice was 006. This guy Alec, that Bond was partnered with at the beginning of GoldenEye, and so you meet him in this park, and it's a first person shooter. So I have a gun out, and I start walking towards him, and he's like, "Put your gun away." And I didn't do it quick enough, and he just runs away, and his bodyguards just shoot me to death. So like, okay, I need to make sure that when I meet him, I don't have my gun. So the next time I run through, I do that. Well, then you get later into the after the interaction with 006. There's like a timer on the screen. It's like, you need to go save Natalia at the helicopter. She's all the way back, all the way across the map. You have to run all the way. You have to do the whole map in reverse. You get there, you save her, and then you have to go find the flight recorder for the helicopter before escaping the level. Well, again, you're being attacked by enemies, so you're shooting them. You go back to where Natalia is, and she's surrounded by like eight Russian guards. And you walk up, and if you still have your gun out, they will just shoot you. Or they'll shoot Natalia. So you fail again. It's like, how would I know this? That I need to put my gun away. Like, it's like bad. To me, it's just like bad design. Like, I would just, because it's a shooter. You plan to shoot things. So it's just weird. Like, and the next level after that, you're escaping from this archive building. I'm wandering around the entire time, going through all the doors, get outside into like a garage area. I'm like, how the hell do I get out of this? Couldn't figure it out. I had to go to this one specific area and shoot out the window. And then you can jump out the window with Natalia. But she has to be with you. If she's not with you, you fail the mission.
See, here's the thing, Ed. It's funny you mentioned that. And I wonder if this is their thinking, because I hear that and I'm like, so much of that is like, oh, they're totally referencing the movie, but is it like, oh, if you had seen GoldenEye recently, because that's how he escapes from that. He shoots out and then the tank chase. But it's like, yes, the movie is, as we noted, 28 years old.
Yeah. It's like,
the game is 26 years old. So it's one of those things.
It is very like true to the movie, at least, like, you know, I mean, not true to the movie. Like there's a bunch of like ridiculous shit that goes on in the game that is not in the movie. But
because the movie's pretty ridiculous, but
yeah, but like you're not wandering through the jungle for 10 minutes killing 200 guards. Like they cut through that a little bit, right? It's not they don't show him taking out all the turrets, and like, 'cause that's one of the objectives in the jungle is like, take out all the turrets. And if you don't do that, here's the other thing. If you don't do that, it allows you to finish the mission. But if you haven't done all the objectives in the mission, it then goes, failed, game over.
Fail.
It's like, okay, I guess I missed that. So I like had to get in the habit of like pressing start, which brings up your watch, and then checking the objectives to see if they were complete or not. It's just old design that doesn't necessarily translate.
That's what I was very fascinated by, because I think I said this last week, or I forgot if I said this, because it is a very popular game. It's been a very highly regarded and requested game from a lot of people. But of all of the genres, especially of that generation, the first-person shooter is the one that has stuck around and evolved a great deal since then. And GoldenEye was ahead of its time.
Yeah.
But that time has long expired. And a lot of its design, I think, is not stuff that people are necessarily... Not that they dislike it now, but it's not what you expect from a shooter nowadays. I like the fact that you can carry a bunch of weapons, but like, there's no good way to cycle through all of them, I believe.
No, well, I mean, you could press start, go to your watch, and choose the weapon you want. That's not really a good solution. Otherwise, it's just like, you know, press Y or RB, and it cycles through them, but doesn't give you the one you want immediately.
And again, I don't mind it, and I think some games do, but not as much. Health packs, very antiquated system for first person. Like I don't mind it, but I think so many people have just grown accustomed to like, oh, I've taken some damage. I'm just gonna hide out behind here for a few seconds to recharge my shields. And it's like, no, you gotta now search the Cephu. And if you used one because you had to fill up like 2 health, you are screwed for the rest of the apple.
But mostly, I had a good time with it. Like, I don't know if I will go back and play all the way through on Secret Agent and 00 Agent. I don't believe I ever did that initially. Because I think that those later levels are a little bit annoying. But I still had fun with it. It is not like this amazing revisiting of it, but it's nice to be able to play it on a modern system. I may reinstall it if I have friends over. We'll play, you know, a multiplayer level or two. Because I think that's about the limit that people will have for wanting to play that. But
it's a great nostalgia trip, but yes, yeah. It is. It is, again, this is why I was never it's an old game. It's an old game that is not, like, people are going to enjoy it for like a weekend, and that's fine. That's totally fine. But this is not going to be like a life, even if they modern, like, the Perfect Dark remake was fine, but it's still very dated on its base level of design.
Yeah. And I was talking with Jeff, and like, he's like, he had actually got into the jungle, so he had gotten through almost the entire game, because you get to the jungle, there's 4 levels left.
Really?
And he's like, this is just annoying. Yeah, like the jungles in Cuba.
I was just starting to think of it through the course of the movie. Again, it's been a while before. It's like, the jungle is the start of the climax of the movie.
Yes.
That's what I'm like, how is there 4 levels left?
So I guess
it's that egg dish.
Yeah, it's jungle, and then there is there's something else that you do in there. And then it's where you kind of blow up where you get Natalia, she like does something, stops the GoldenEye from shooting. Oh, no, so it goes jungle, then the base where Natalia stops the GoldenEye. Then you go through these caverns, which, you know, you're chasing Aleph through the caverns. And then you get out and you're on the satellite dish. That's the final level.
Okay, so they just took the climax and split it up into 4 different sections.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah, the catacombs or whatever is like when he's chasing him through the satellite. He's actually chasing him through the satellite dish, and they end up fighting, and that's where he hangs over, and yeah.
The satellite dish is ridiculous, because the end of that is you need to take out Alec. And so he is just running around. Like, he runs on a loop. It's the same loop every single time. But you need to follow him because otherwise he will stop at certain spots. So basically, you need to chase him. And it's just ridiculous because you're just running the same loop over and over again, trying to take shots at him until you get enough damage that he'll jump down. And then once you finish him off, he'll fall. Just the most ridiculous looking. Like, it was probably really cool 26 years ago. Looks absurd now. It's just like pixels falling to their death. Yeah, it's... I like it. I enjoy retro games, though. I think some people may go into it and be like, this is so bad. Like, yeah, like, it's old. It plays like an old game. So.
I'm very fascinated, because I'm sure there's also people like, this is what you folks are talking about? This game?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to explain what that game meant, because that's just not how we play games now. Like if we want to play a shooter, we get our friends together, we play a shooter, we play it online, we maybe play with anywhere between, you know, four additional people outside of your friend group, up to what's Battlefield 2042 have, Tony, like 128 people.
Right.
So like it's impossible to be like, hey, at one point in time, having four people playing on a 13-inch TV screen was like the height of gaming.
Yeah.
People just don't understand that if they didn't kind of love it. So I'm glad it's there. I'm glad we can play it, but it's not going to win any awards.
Well, I mean, I was going to say the positive is that I do like that. Again, it's free for both systems. It's free on the Switch. It's free on the Xbox. So it is something that you can have to just experience again.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly where. That's why I'm perfectly happy with this. Like, I'm glad that I have it again. I don't have to get my N64 out and put the cartridge in and hope that old, you know, 26, 27 year old hardware and cartridge is still operational. Cause that stuff's getting a little rickety now too. Just like we are.
What? Speak for yourself.
All right. Well, just like I am. All right. Well, I think that is it for what we've been playing this week. No Monster Hunter talk, cause Jeff did not join us. What do we think for Game Pass Game of January?
Well, I've already said my pick, because you don't call something early contender for Game of the Year and not pick it as your Game Pass Game of the Month.
I feel that's true. That is my pick as well. Tony, I think you're leaning Age of Empires.
I am.
And Jeff, I don't believe that this was a good faith vote, but he also said that he would have voted for Age of Empires. So, or I guess we're tied. Like, have a split winner for January. Age of Empires Definitive Edition and Hi-Fi Rush, which I think both come highly recommended from us. We'll be back next week. I don't know with what.
I mean, the word on the street, but the word on the street is always the word on the street, is we might be in for the Nintendo Direct next week. So, yeah.
Do we have a date on Tears of the Kingdom, or just sometime this year?
Zelda?
Yeah.
It is. We do have a date. It is 98 days from now. I owe you know that because everybody on my Twitter timeline was talking about it's 100 days away, I think, on January 31st. It is sometime in May. We can pull it up now. It's like May 12th. So it is a little more than 4 months away. Which, again, was part of the reason why, you know, Nintendo not at E3, because they don't really have... Not that they don't have any games, but they don't have any. They feel they don't have anything major after Zelda. Like they have Pikmin and stuff, but
they don't have Mario Odyssey 2.
Yes, they won't have Odyssey, or they won't have a new Pokemon game, or clearly not a new Zelda game. So
I will laugh hysterically if Prime 4 releases this year, and they were like, yeah, that's just not big enough for us to have an E3 presence.
I wouldn't be mad at them.
I think people would be very happy, but
it would be very funny if it would be Prime 3 and Pikmin 4 and just be like, yeah, we just didn't think we had anything major, and Jeff just
Jeff's two most anticipated games outside of Zelda, and Nintendo's like, yeah, they're not really important. All right. Well, we'll be back next week, maybe with Nintendo news. Otherwise, we will have some game stuff. Jeff should be back. He can tell us all about Monster Hunter Rise, and how that is not our Game Pass game of the month. Earl, say goodnight.
Good night.